Good morning. So we're starting with a quiz. Oh, good. Who has noticed something different about the gospel this week and last week as compared to the gospels we've been reading all year? Nobody knew at any of the other masses either. Don't worry about it. It's just the two of us, Father Keith, who noticed these things, apparently. But it's our job, so it's okay. All this year, we've been working our way through the Gospel of Mark. We've been doing it for months. But last week, we jumped over into the Gospel of John for his account of the feeding of the 5,000. Mark does give, just as Luke and Matthew do, give similar account of that event of the loaves and the fishes. But we go to John's Gospel this year because he links that feeding of the crowd to the discussion we begin this week, and will continue for three more weeks, by the way. It is called the Bread of Life Discourse. This is the principal Eucharistic teaching in John. Here is his exposition of our central sacrament, Eucharist. Communion. Mark and Luke and Matthew all locate their Eucharistic scene at the Last Supper, right before Jesus is killed. That's what we're familiar with. Father Raymond Brown was probably the 20th century's preeminent scholar of the writings of John, and he suggests that this simple change in where the teaching about Eucharist is located in the flow of the story of Jesus carries an important message. This is it. Jesus, as bread of life, is not tied exclusively to Jesus' death, but relates equally to Jesus' action in his ministry, like the feeding of the 5,000. Our communion is not only a remembrance of his total self-giving, but is also to be our sustenance in our own journey toward unity with him and with all creation. This bread of life phrase isn't merely a symbolic description of who Jesus is, nor even of what happens to him on the cross. It is a title describing what Jesus does. He continually feeds us, fuels us toward our realization of eternal life. As always, in this passage, Jesus has to deal with misunderstanding of his message from everyone. Some of the 5,000 who were fed find him in a synagogue in Capernaum, and he chastises them. You are looking for me not because you saw signs, but because you ate the loaves and were filled. You're looking for another free lunch. He's saying, you ate your fill, but you have no idea of what that really meant. The sign, the feeding of the body, was to point the way to entrusting oneself totally to the message that Jesus brings. Then they ask him for a sign. They say, what can you do that we might see and believe? Now, remember, these are the people who were just across the lake having a little picnic with 5,000 of their closest friends. I imagine them saying, while holding their still full bellies, could you give us a sign? Could you do that? We want to believe. Now that word, believe, shows up almost 100 times in John's Gospel, more in John than any other of our canonical writers. And John uses that word always in a very specific way, and it doesn't translate easily. Let me try to shed a little light on the nuance with this little story. There are two friends watching a circus, watching a high wire performer. His big finish is a stunt where he is working 50 feet off the ground. It's an imaginary tent. It's very tall. With no safety net, and his finish is to fill a wheelbarrow with bricks and walk across this little tiny wire from one side of the tent to the other. And just as the wire walker is about to step off the platform and do this, one friend turns to the other and says, "Do you believe in that performer that he will do what he promises to do?" And the other says, "Well, he makes his living doing this. He is still living. And besides, I was here on Wednesday and I saw him do it. So, yeah, I believe." And the other friend says, "Well, then, climb up there and get in the wheelbarrow." "What, are you nuts? That would be crazy." So you don't really believe in him. You have made some observations, given them some thought, and formed a belief. But you have no personal stake in the outcome. If you truly believed in the performer, you would happily get into the wheelbarrow. If we believed in the way John's Jesus uses that word, we would get into the wheelbarrow too. You see, here's the thing. Whenever John uses that word, it is always in a verb form, never as a noun. It is always something that one does and continues to do. Never is it something that one has and just puts on a shelf. Scholars tell us that the sense of the word in the way that John uses it might better be communicated if we substituted for the word believe in English, if we substituted the phrase, "entrust your life entirely to." Listen to two of the spots in today's passage with that phrase substituted for the word believe. "This is the work of God, that you entrust your life entirely to the one he sent. Whoever entrusts themselves, their life, entirely to me will never thirst." Makes more sense that way, doesn't it? I know it does to me. I have this very clear memory of myself as a little 5 or 6 year old kid hearing that I really need to believe in Jesus. And I wanted to, and I tried to, and I had no idea how to. I was kind of like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. All I could do was try real hard to hold on to that thought. Huh? I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. But even as a 5 or 6 year old, that was not very convincing for me. It wasn't a very satisfying belief. You see, to believe in the gospel sense is not just a verb, but it is a verb that doesn't refer only to what we do in our head. It involves the whole of our being. It means we take action, always loving, always trusting action, in response to a growing relationship with God through Christ. And we can know that we are taking the right actions when we begin to sense our relationship with God through Christ growing as a result of the things we learn and the relationships we find and build as a result of our actions. When we believe in this sense, we begin to be able to see for ourselves the difference between the temporary, the temporal, the food that perishes, as distinguished from the truly worthwhile, the life-giving, the gift of Jesus himself uniting his spirit with our own, the food that endures for eternal life.